Thought for today. All is in divine right order. All is in divine right order. All is in divine right order. That's a very powerful statement. Most of our lives, we feel, are not in divine right order. We feel that the growing pains that we have and the various experiences that we have, it's not divine right order. And it is divine right order because that's what we chose to do. Now, do you choose to be human? Then you have your growing pains. Do you choose to be in divine right order? Then you might say you wouldn't have your growing pains. But what is divine right order for you? Divine right order is not necessarily one chosen area. It could be. It could be. If we live in divine right order, we are doing everything that we are doing in our life because it is what we feel is for our highest and best. Now, some people may do things thinking they're for their highest and best and fail miserably. Let's look at the case of an athlete. Here we have an Olympic runner, very finely tuned athlete. He loves to run. He runs, he runs, he runs. He does well. He wins a medal or two. And then he retires from running. Now, he always has the body of an athlete, sometimes a little fatter than usual, but he always has the body of an athlete. Underneath whatever he is in the outer, he is an athlete. He thinks as an athlete. He eats as an athlete. He acts as an athlete. But he has retired from being an athlete. And in his retirement, he usually changes his attitude about himself. In his retirement, he says, "I don't run anymore. I'm too old." And he's maybe 38. In his retirement, he says, "I can't do this anymore. I'm an old man now. I'm past my prime." And so he doesn't do it. We have many athletes who do not agree with this. Many athletes who are very successful, very, very, very successful. I am not an aficionado of athletics, but I have read about a number of these people. If I were an aficionado of athletes, of athletics, I would say, "Oh yes, this game won that, and that team won that, and they had their high here, and this is their best man, and this is..." But that's not my thing. So suffice it to say, I will speak in generalities. There are athletes today who have their multi-million dollars that they earn in the sport. And then they take that multi-million dollars and they invest it well. And many of them like to invest it in young people to encourage them to live the life of a noble athlete. And then they get the bug. They're going to die. They get the bug. They got to play again. The bug says to him, "Come on, you were a good football star, and I'll be a good baseball star." And so they take up baseball with the same enthusiasm, the same interest, the same desire as they did in football. And they not only play well, they become outstanding, and they become chosen by the major teams, major leagues, to play for them. They have given up athletics, but they have returned. Well, that is quite good. They are staying in their activity of athletics, and that's wonderful. But that's not enough. They play the game, they win the game, they prove themselves tremendous as an athlete in baseball after first proving it in football. And now they tire of that because they have proven themselves on each level of proficiency. Now they quit that at their peak, where they're excellent, exquisite, and they take an interest in soccer, or they take an interest in hockey, or they take an interest in any of the innumerable sports. And with the same precision, the same dedication they gave to each other athletic skill that they developed, they give it to the new athletic skill. They're now in their 40s. They're now in their 50s. They're now in their 60s. And in their 60s, they're not invited to play in the young man's sports. So they take up the triathlon. And they learn to ride a bike. And they learn to run. And they learn to swim. The triathletic events of a triathlon. Some triathlons have other events in them, but these are common. And they become exquisite in riding a bike because they train themselves in the art of riding, in the art of riding a bike with skill and precision and charm and love, and not that their muscles are tired, not that they're tired, but that they apply themselves to it. They have a coach and teach themselves how to swim. And they swim with precision and skill, with artistic movement of their legs and their arms, synchronization throughout their entire lithe, athletic, wonderful body. And they run. And they have a track coach who teaches them how to run. And they run with exquisite skill. And they win the triathlon. All of their life, all they know is winning, because all they know is pure application to whatever they're applying themselves. Now the rest of the world looks on and says, wow, aren't they marvelous having all these many careers? They only have one career. And that career is liking themselves and applying themselves with their exquisite skill, the divine within them, to whatever they do. I was going to say, I guarantee you, and I do guarantee you, but that's not the point. Believe me, and that's not the point either. You can be sure that's not the point either. Pay attention to these guys now. What do they do around the house? Do they keep their house, their yard in perfect shape and beautiful shape? Not necessarily perfect, beautiful shape? Yes. When they help their wife, or maybe they're the woman when they help their husband, doing the dishes. Do they do those dishes with the same dedicated care? Every single water spot is wiped off that dish. That dish is polished within the inch of its life. Their dishes keep getting thinner and thinner and thinner. But they care. And when they put the kids to bed, do they put the kids, go up and go to bed now. You've had your movie, you've watched your television, you had your dinner now. Give me a kiss, go to bed now. No. They go upstairs, or they go into the child's room, and they say, okay, it's time for bed now. And then they sit in a chair next to the child, and they turn on the Mr. Candle tapes. And they listen to Mr. Candle offering wonderful ideas for young children to guide their life by. Not teaching them what's right and wrong, just gentle stories of love. And they listen to that too. And they say, you know, I could be a Mr. Candle. And so, as they wear out the tape, night after night, Daddy begins saying, hey, I am Mr. Candle. And the child looks over and says, Daddy, you're Mr. Candle? And he says, yes, I'm Mr. Candle. And before you know it, exquisitely, beautifully, sensitively, caringly, with all the skill he applies to his sport, he applies it to being Mr. Candle, to being that gentle, loving consciousness that puts a child into the wonderful land of Nod and sprinkles pixie dust all over him and sends him off into dreamland. Pure love. Now, another thing. This athlete applies his skill and precision in being a dedicated, loving, one-pointed father and husband. He finds in his marriage what he puts there. He puts there trust and love and gentleness. He puts there that he has the most magnificent wife who has ever walked the face of the earth, and she is. Not because she was, but because she is. Around him, she is that. And you can be sure that she is that not around him, too. She has no desire in life for any other mate except him, and he has no desire for any other mate except her. A charming, wonderful marriage. And he has a mother and father, and he loves them. Not because they're lovable, but because he loves them, and they are lovable because he loves them. And he goes over and doesn't shower them with gifts of his largesse, of his great money. He goes over and showers them with himself, with his care. He will go and mow their lawn. He could afford to have a gardener come over and take care of it perfectly for them, but he goes over and mows their lawn. He goes over and stands with Mom at the kitchen sink and dries the dishes or washes the dishes and says, "Mom, you're always so thoughtful and loving. Mom," and he creates her in his world exactly like he is. All is in divine order when you put it in divine order. Now, these were very human illustrations that I gave. They're very human ways of looking at things. And this is what you each have chosen to be, is to be very human. But each of you has said to me any number of times that the various books that I'm writing on Absolute really turn you on. They really make you feel, wow. You'd like to know more about Absolute. You'd like to know more about being the Absolute, not the Absolute, it's without an article, but being Absolute. You'd like to know more about being Absolute, about who you are as Absolute and what it means to be Absolute. And subtly, gently, I share this with you from time to time, inserting it in various activities that we're doing. And the moment I insert it in the activities that we're doing, you want to cut my throat. "You're so cold. You're so unfeeling. You're so uncaring." Hey, use that in another way. I'm expressing unconditional love to you. I love you just as much as I love myself, and that's a lot. I love you just as much as I love anybody else. There is no one I love more, even myself. I cannot love myself more than I love all of the people in my world, all of my creation. But that sounds cold. But that's absolute. That's divine right order. You see, the little symbols of divine right order that we have of the athlete training himself with skill and wisdom and knowing the right thing to do so that he can be a winner in whatever he plays. It's not fun. It's fun for him, but it's not fun. It's a job for the coach to make sure that he's watching, that he puts his feet down correctly as he runs, that he has his toe down, and that his heel is in the right position, and that he's moving along like an antelope, and that he has a stride and a stroke. And the coach says, "Now watch that stride, now watch that stroke, now move your feet, now do this." And he'd like to kill the coach. Ugh. but he follows what the coach says because he knows it leads him to where he wants to go. He's in the swimming pool, and the coach ties a rope around his waist and ties him to the back of the swimming pool and says, "Now swim." Swim. And then the coach takes great big rubber fins and puts them on his hands, and fins and puts them on his feet. He said, "Now kick and swim, and kick and swim, and kick and swim." And the guy said, "Oh, this is no fun." But after a month of doing this, it becomes easy, and the fins are taken away. And now he kicks and swims, and he really pulls against that rope. If he had a swimex to swim against the 10-mile-an-hour current or less, he would be doing it quite nicely. But everyone doesn't have that honor. He goes into the ocean, and he swims across the beach. And he swims with skill and precision. And then he comes back. He does this even though he has his lesson, and he's tired after his lesson. And his coach says, "You've improved a lot." He says, "Thank you, coach." He applies himself daily, diligently, with discipline. He applies himself when everybody else is watching TV and laughing, when everyone else is sitting back after dinner and having a cigar and a glass of cognac and stuff like that. He goes out to the pool and swims. When everybody else is sitting in front of the TV set falling fast asleep, he is talking to his children, and he is telling them all is in divine right order. Follow your dream, follow your heart. Oh, it will be tough at times because you're learning new skills. And as you learn new skills, you're going to find out you have muscles you hadn't really realized you had. But apply yourself. Apply yourself with diligence and dedication and determination, but mostly with discipline. And as you do that, you will learn for yourself unconditional love. You will learn for yourself not to be touched by what others are doing in the world that you'd like to do. Not to run off to Hawaii, not to run off to the points of the earth because that's where life is at. But you are all that count. Richard Bach made a statement after one of his lectures that just stuck with me so beautifully. Richard Bach, as you know, wrote Illusions and Jonathan Livingston Seagull and many other books. But the people gathered around him, looking at him as some great guru because he allowed the wisdom to come through him and allowed him to write the book. And they said, "Mr. Bach." How anyone could call him Mr. Bach, I don't know. After reading the books, he becomes so personal to you. "Richard," that's more like it. "How do I find the divinity within myself as Jonathan Livingston Seagull found it in himself? How do I find it?" And so Richard says, "My friend, I will answer any question you have to my total satisfaction." And then he proceeds to answer the question to his total satisfaction. He's not worried about whether the answer is right for her. He's not worried about whether he is speaking to her in a clear and a beautiful way. He is just answering it to his total satisfaction. So when he gets done, "Yep, that's right, that's what I believe, that's what I think, that's what I know." Now I would like each of us to arrive at that point for ourselves where we live to our total satisfaction. We have people in Russia who would love to have us come there so that we could be a money-making operation for them and publishing our books up there and doing these things. And already we started on it a little bit. Are we going up there to have them be a money-making operation for themselves? Or are we going up there to share our philosophy? Are we going up there to speak to the people? Or are we going up there to make money? If we have a seminar, we should charge the going rate of any other seminar speaker. If he charges $1,000 a lecture a night, then we charge $1,000. And if nobody comes, that's just fine. Because we know the value of our material. We are doing it for ourselves. Deepak Chopra doesn't change the value of his seminars just because people can't afford it. If people can't afford it, then they don't really want it. Now, he's eleemosynary and philanthropic, and he gives of himself many times. But when he gives of himself, he does it to his standard. He does it to his standard. Never does he say that what he shares and gives is of little value. Unfortunately, the way we value things today is by the price we put on them. I'm amused, not unkindly amused, but I'm amused as I look at the Maharishi, the Krishna movement. And in the Krishna movement, they have this big, fat, thick book. And they go into the theaters, they go into the train stations, they go into the airports and stuff, and they say, Hare Krishna, and then they want to tell you something nice, and then they want to give you this book. Please take this book. Now, what will you give for it? After they've given it to you, they say, what will you give for it? And I say, I give you the book back. And they say, oh, you know, most people feel they have to give them, that's a thick book, at least $10, maybe more. They get a lot of money. Now, of the millions, and millions are what they have published, of the millions of those books that they have given out, how many are read? How many are read past the first page after people read and they find that it's a philosophy that's a little bit foreign to them? You see, we have a tendency to give ourselves to things that we don't believe in. If someone comes up to you and says, come on, let's go smoke marijuana together, and you don't want to offend them, so you go and smoke marijuana with them. Go ahead, offend them. It's your life. It's your world. It's your habits that you're developing within yourself. Hey, see that guy over there? He said some naughty things. Let's go gang up on him and beat the hell out of him. And so the lynch mob forms and goes over and beats up on this guy. Well, what did he say? He said, you are all beautiful people. You are all gods. You are all in charge of your world. Well, I don't think that's so bad. I do, because I don't believe that. Let's go lynch him. Well, hey, I'm not going to play your game. But yet we do. We turn on the television and we watch everybody else's game. We want to learn the new products that are available. We want to learn all of the new jokes that are going around. We want to learn all of the slang and unhappy things that people are saying. We want to learn that. We concentrate on that. Well, no. If you're going to practice for the Olympics, your coach is going to say, no liquor, no smoking. This was even way back before people thought it didn't think it was bad. If you want to be coached by me and you want to win, then follow what I tell you. But coach, One little glass of wine, one cigarette. Coach says, no. You're tough. No. You have the temple of the living God. And I am taking that temple and I am training that temple to be the soul of an athlete. I am training that temple to be magnificent beyond comprehension. Do you want that? Or do you want your cigarette and your glass of wine? But just a glass of wine, that's the symbol of it. And the symbol says, I am not following the rules. I am not a winner. I am not successful because I do not follow the rules. Well, great. If you want me as your coach, then follow the rules. No wine, no cigarette. Oh, no wine, no cigarette. You have trained a lot of other Olympic champions and you have succeeded very wonderfully, and that's why I chose you. So I guess I'll just have to go along with what you say. No, don't go along with what I say. Go along with what you know in your heart is right. Because if you think that drinking a glass of wine and having a cigarette is so important to you that it would make you not want to follow the goal of being an Olympic champion, then you go right ahead. Actually, the cigarette and the wine have nothing to do with it at all. They are merely the symbol. Can you recognize that all is in divine or right order? Can you recognize that? Can you recognize in your life that you have followed all the rules you know to be good and beautiful? Have you ever lied to yourself, of course? Have you ever taken anything that didn't belong to you? Have you ever spoke unkindly about anyone else? Or have you ever spoken unkindly about yourself? These are rules that need to be put into order. All is in divine order. When you say all is in divine order, then you are in divine order. When you say all is in divine order, I follow the highest and best within me, and I am the winner all the time. The sportsman who goes out and he wins at football, he retires. He wins at baseball, he retires. He wins at soccer, what a fast game, he retires. He wins at hockey. He wins at being a husband or a wife. He wins at being a father. He wins at being a human being of absolute integrity. He wins at life because he says of himself, all is in divine right order, and I am divine right order. He says of himself, there's nothing else important in this universe except for me to live in divine right order. And divine right order is listening within. Divine right order is believing in yourself. Divine right order is to follow the rules, whatever they may be. And here at the monastery, one of our rules is that the rules are always changing. They're always changing. So we don't get possessed by the rules. So we don't get possessed by our desk or our computer. But unfortunately, we have become a little bit commercial here, and we have taken the talents of some of you and kept them in the same grind. And no matter how I suggest we change it, it doesn't happen. No matter what I suggest we do, it doesn't happen, because you know better. Well, enjoy. I put all in divine right order. I'm your coach. And I expect the best out of each of you. I am training you to be a God champion, a divine champion. The Olympics that go beyond all Olympics, the Olympics in your heart. And if that's what you want, then you're in the right place. If that's not what you want, you'll find where you want, and you'll be there. But meanwhile, you got me, and I love you. All is in divine right order, now and forevermore. You're super. I love you. I do. Yes.